worship is still praying for me. I come from the school of Tupac. I'm a rider.
Yeah.
I'm a straight rider.
Y'all wanna mess
you don't
want
to what?
Mess with me.
See, I'm not your average Negro.
Hold up. Taz, I want to ask you a question real quick.
Let's just keep it real straight shot with no tape, because I'm going to get a little bit rough.
It's about standing for justice, and if these guys like
you either with us or you not. I'm here for those who really believed in the American process, all of us.
You play with me if you want to, man. We don't care for him. Who we? See, I'm not your average Negro.
Hold up.
Straight shot, no chaser, with your girl Tesla Figaro on the Black Effect Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? This is your girl Tesla Figaro, host of Straight Shot, No Chaser on the Black Effect Podcast Network on iHeartRadio. Today is very important, a very important day. We are setting the record straight with Attorney Benjamin Crump. This is one of my most important episodes for many reasons that you'll find out as we move forward in the podcast. The main reason is because I want all of the myths and misconceptions straightened out today. I'm gonna give it to you straight shot, no chaser. This is unscripted. This is not pre-advanced questions. This is just a conversation between me and my friend, Attorney Benjamin Crump. You know him as a gladiator. You know him as someone that comes in at what they call Ghostbusters, the Black Attorney General for America. He is someone that families call their first call when they want justice. Today, we're gonna spend some time to get into the things that him and I talk about all the time. I am, just as a disclaimer, Attorney Benjamin Crump's one of his political consultants. We have worked together for years. And one of the biggest frustrations that I have is the misinformation that is out there. We will certainly talk about cases. This will not be the last time that Attorney Benjamin Crump will join Straight Shot No Chaser with Tesla Figaro. But I really feel it's important that we spend some time digging into him as a person, as a human being, and what it means to carry the mantle of social justice. Welcome, Attorney Benjamin Crump.
I'm so very honored to be one of your first guests on this incredible new podcast. It is so appropriate for you, Tez, because they don't know you give it straight, no chaser, even when you're not on air. Always.
Yes, they do. And like Attorney Benjamin Crump always says, I give him unsolicited advice. That means that I tell him things that he did not ask for, but I give it to him anyway.
I will say this. I am so very proud of you. You know, your evolution continues to amaze me. And so, Tez, you know, God has a lot of things in store for you. This is but one step on the journey.
Oh, thank you so much, Attorney Crump. I really, really appreciate your leadership. And, you know, this was so important to me because, as you know, I'm always saying, you know, Ben, I wish they would go deeper into you to talk about what you endure, why these families call you, what type of burden it puts on you, all of the things that go behind the scenes. I know we can't talk a lot about, you know, behind the scenes for client confidentiality, but as close to the line as we can get to really paint the picture is important to me. But I really want listeners to be able to address a lot of the things that they hear on social media. You are someone that is steadfast. You are unmovable. When I call you, I'm like, Attorney Crump, they're saying this or that. And you're like, Tez, we got to stay focused on the main thing. We have to keep our eyes on the prize. We have to stay focused on what is ahead. And you are the most unbothered, calm, consistent client that I've ever worked with. To see how you work with so many different families, always in a crisis, is amazing. Let's deal with the first myth that I think is so important. A lot of people say, you know, why do they call Attorney Crump? And I tell people that I was critical of you as well. Before I knew you, I didn't understand why why is he the one? Why is he the first, you know, person on the scene? After working with you and seeing the connection that you make with these families and the trust and the immediate rapport that you have to build within a matter of hours, sometimes seconds, because what people don't understand is when they call you in a crisis, it's immediate. There's no time to sit back and get to know one another or whatever. So you have to have an instant connection when you meet these families. Can you talk a little bit about why other attorneys, because I say this all the time, and you know, I'm your Malcolm, you're the Martin, I'm the Malcolm. So a lot of civil rights attorneys, they don't want to take these cases. Can you talk about twofold why local civil rights attorneys do not want to take these high profile cases challenging the system? And then two, how do you connect with these families and why do you see them as being the go-to guy in this space?
You know, Tesla, it is really deep when you think about a lot of people historically would not take these cases. I remember the great Dick Gregory told me after Trayvon Martin, We were up in Philadelphia, Trayvon's mother and myself, and he said, you know, Ben Crump, what you have done is made it cool again to be a civil rights lawyer. Because after the King era and the 60s and so forth, everybody started going for money. Everybody was getting these corporate jobs and so forth. Nobody was talking about going to fight for marginalized, disenfranchised Black people. But what we started doing, and my former law partner, Darryl Parks, and I, we went to law school to try to fight for our people, to try to give them an equal opportunity at the American dream, equal opportunity at achieving justice. And so I think the reason they called me Tez is just that I always try to be who I am. I try to be honest. I try to tell them I'm passionate about the cause of justice. I tell them that I promise you we will get to the truth. I never ever promise them that the justice system is going to work for them, because in America, you have no guarantee at justice. All you have is a chance at justice. And so I know what we do on our side, Tez, as you and I talk a lot, I'm the civil rights attorney. And the only thing we can do as private citizens, private attorneys, is to bring a civil rights wrongful death lawsuit and get the family compensation. We can do no more than that based on our form of government. It is the elected government officials, the prosecutors, the state attorneys, the district attorneys, who are the only ones who can arrest somebody, take away their liberty interest, and put them in jail. So, you know, when I hear about these negative things being said on social media, I think about all the love and the respect we get, the fact that we can't stop our phones from ringing, Tez, as we often talked about. And then I think about my heroes. I think about Thurgood Marshall and all the criticisms he got, not just from white people, but from Black people, the people he was trying to help. Martin Luther King, you know, you go watch The King and the Winner, the last 3 years of Martin Luther King's life. He was the most hated man in America, not by white people, by Black people. Malcolm X, hated and vilified. And so I say to myself, if all my heroes had to go through these trials and tribulations, who am I to think I'm better, that I should not go through these trials and tribulations? Who am I to be so arrogant to think that everybody is going to love me? And the fact that we're taking on these highly, what others would call, Tesla, controversial issues, when you're talking about white police officers going to jail, when for 401 years in America, that has not been the history of America. Normally they kill us and nobody's held accountable. So what we have been able to do in the last 10 to 15 years is change the conversation, change the narratives, where we're having an expectation of white police officers going to prison for killing us. Remember, in our mother and grandparents' day, Emmett Till, that was accepted. That was the norm. And we think that in these 40, 50 years, America has changed. No, it has not. Tess, look at the statistics. I mean, 50% of the prisons in most states in America are occupied by Black people, even though we only make up 13% of the population in America. The easiest way to get on death row in America, two ways. One, to be a person of color, and to kill a white person. That's the quickest way to get to death row in America. The second quickest way to get to death row in America is to be a person of color and be accused of killing a white person. I mean, the quickest ways to get on death row. When you juxtapose that, test, you have white people kill Black people and persons of color. There's no guarantee they're going to get on death row. There's no guarantee they're even going to prison. In fact, I mean, they kill us because of the racist Jim Crow stand your ground laws. They ain't no guarantee they're going to be arrested. They kill our children and go home and sleep in their beds at night. So that's the message that's being projected from our court system without saying a word, that Black lives don't matter as much as white lives. And we have to remember that we're fighting 400 years of systematic racism and oppression. So don't condemn the people who are out here trying to fight for you while you don't say anything about these prosecutors who keep letting these killer cops get off. These prosecutors who every day in every city, in every state in America, keep giving up these trumped up felony convictions against our children. Let's educate, engage, and empower our people. And nobody does that like you, Tess.
I appreciate you saying that. And that's why this interview is so critical, because let's go back to when you talked about the money, because this is one of the things I tell people all the time. People who think the money's in the civil rights business got it completely twisted. That's number one. It is so much easier to file a medical malpractice suit, get 20, 30, 40 million with endless funds available, number one, not have to deal with the public scrutiny. Not a lot of times that's brought to media attention. Those are usually private matters, which addresses, we're going to get to that when we talk about how you bring the media involved in it and why that's so important. You could settle a medical malpractice lawsuit quietly under the table without the media, because they think that the media plays a role in the settlement. Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But we know that you can still get a big settlement without the media. We know that by medical malpractice. Under the table, limitless amount of money, because you can sue the doctor, you can sue the hospital, you can sue everybody involved. We know that in the criminal justice space, that's not the case. Most state, city, and we're talking about police officers, have caps on the amount of money that can be paid out to someone. That's number one. Number two, we have what we're pushing for called implied immunity, which will allow us to sue these police officers personally, which is not the case in a lot of states right now as we talk. Number three, who's to say that the police officer will even have a policy? If any. And if it is, maybe, if you're lucky, maybe $1 million policy. Speak to this idea that is all about the money when you have to look at the balance of dealing with the death threats, not even getting the money. Let's talk about how many black attorneys out there can actually push a case for a year or two or however long and have the resources. That's what people don't understand. It takes resources to file these cases. You don't take one dime from these families unless you win, just like anything else. If somebody slips and falls or get hurt in an accident and you hear the commercials say, I don't take a dime if you win. Talk about the investment, the enormous amount of investment, one from financial, physical, spiritual, meaning having to deal with the death threats and all of that, that goes into these cases. Speak to that on how it is not just about the money on the civil side, that this is the wrong business to get into if you're looking for money first.
No, Tez, it's like my mother say, people want the glory, but they don't know my story. And that really speaks truth to power when you think about the fact that it is so easy to go just take the money. I have 13 offices around the country. I have lawyers who work with me who are exceptional lawyers who make money every day on personal injury, business-related cases, discrimination-related cases, mass torts, class action work. And you know, Tess, because you do a lot of political consulting to help us frame these issues for the public when we go against these Goliath corporations. And I just think about the biggest amounts we made had nothing to do with civil rights last year. You know, we represented a young boy, a young white boy in a golf cart accident and recovered $38 million. And so it's those type cases. You're right. It would be so easy just to concentrate on that. But I know why I became a lawyer. I did not become a lawyer just to make money. I became a lawyer to try to make a difference. And you can never, ever run from who you are. It is in my core, like it's in your core, Tess. It's like it's in people who care about our culture, who care about our people, to say, despite whatever they say, I'm going to try to make a difference, to make life better for them. And they may not appreciate it. And I think about, you know, we just got a historic settlement in Flint, Michigan, the most ever paid out for children by an individual state, $600 million. And we're probably going to get another $1 billion from the federal government if we ever get it to court. That took 5 years. And while we're doing that, you're having to pay for all these experts, pay for all this deposition, pay for all this discovery. You're investing millions and millions of dollars on a chance at justice, trying to get something that had never been done in Flint, Michigan. But you work with great lawyers and you say we're committed to equal justice under the law and that these black children's lives matter. Because when Tez and I were going through Flint, we saw how devastating it was, this lead water crisis, to black families. and nobody, you know, it was a constant limb for a minute, and then they kind of moved on, because that's what happened with all these police shooting cases too. It'll be big and then they'll move on, but you have to stay the course, and there's a much easier way to make money. And people don't want to get the death threats. People don't want to be ostracized. You know, when you walk by, people whispering and everything, people calling you a race baita, people calling you an outside agitator. What was Daniel Cameron and Breonna Taylor saying? These people who don't live in Kentucky need to stay out of here. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing they said about Martin Luther King. That's the same thing they said about Thurgood Marshall. People coming in to a city to say, this is not right. And if nobody in this city has the courage to say what is right, then we're going to say what's right. I will never forget when you and I, Tez, went to Oklahoma City for those 13 black women that had been raped by that white police officer. And the fact that they called us a race baiter. They said, Ben Crump bringing racism to Oklahoma City. And I remember Tez was one of the people who kept pushing me to look at that case. And then when I finally got there during the criminal trial, and they had literally the women who were raped by this police officer, they brought them in court in handcuffs and shackles in their jail uniforms. But they had the police officer sitting up there in a shirt and tie, looking like the most dignified person in the world. Mm-hmm. And I remember us ringing the alarm, bringing attention, because it was almost as if these black women were unrapeable, that there was no fact pattern that we could give to say that it would be defined as rape. And I remember Tez and I and Demario Solomon Simmons, we working our butts off on social media to try to get people to pay attention, to say that their life matter and their life experiences matter. And the first thing the media said to us, Tez, if you remember, Ben Crump bringing racism in America here to Oklahoma City. And the one thing I said, because I'm a good trial lawyer and we have to think quick on our feet, I said, no, I didn't bring racism to Oklahoma City. I just took the blindfolders off so y'all can see it too.
Let's dig in that, because
we're still working on that case.
That's right. And they still don't talk about it as they should. And that's what bothers me. You have worked on over 200 cases, police brutality cases. We're not talking about all the other cases that you've done, torts, different things that you've done. But 200 police brutality cases, many of which people have never heard of, many of which with victims still alive. When we talk about the Oklahoma City 13, those women are still alive, still going through that grief, still having to deal with that trauma. And you don't hear them, you know, talk about that. When I hear people say that you've never won a case, it bothers the hell out of me, as you know, because one, it's the misconception, not understanding you're a civil rights attorney, not the state, you know. You did not lose the Trayvon Martin case. You brought attention to the case. Had you not brought attention over these last 10, 12 years, we now have seen incremental change. Since the George Floyd murder, over 100 cities have now changed police reform on one level or another, whether it's been banning chokeholds or distributing community resources, money from policing back into community resources. If these cases were not brought into the spotlight consistently, because anybody can do a one-time story, 5-minute story, 7-minute story. You have an ability to bring influences together, politicians together, activists together, to stay consistent on a message back to back. And what I've always admired about your leadership is you don't just work with people that agree with you. I have great respect for you, great admiration for you, but you allow me to challenge in areas of things that I may not disagree with. You always listen to say, Tez, I heard what you said. I'm taking it into consideration. And I believe that is what makes, at least from my personal experience, what makes you such an excellent leader with galvanizing people. How do you get folks with like an Al Sharpton and people who have been very critical of Al Sharpton are totally different than Al Sharpton's philosophy, to get them together on one accord to keep us all focused on the task at hand?
You know, and Tez, you saw a little bit of that when we were in Los Angeles with the legendary music icon George Clinton, talking about the National Black Songwriters Association to try to stop this musical sharecropping, where he said black artists, when we have our creative genius to create this incredible music catalog and this intellectual property, and then we're never compensated at the level of our white counterparts by the music industry. They tried to make us sharecrop. We representing Ed Townsend and Marvin Gaye against Ed Sheeran and Sony Corporation to say that that song, Thinking Out Loud, was taken, and the judge agrees we have similarities to the classic hit, Let's Get It On. And so quite literally, you have us taking on this Goliath corporation. You don't get no bigger than Sony. But it's a matter of principle when you say, hold on, George Clinton, can I get you here? And Snoop Dogg, will you join in? And Pharrell, will you lend your voice to say that this is about us all?
Another misconception out there is that you tell families to forgive the oppressor, to forgive the police, to forgive those who have harmed their loved one. I want to make clear from my experience with you, years of experience with you, I have never witnessed you tell a family that it is best that they forgive. And if they forgive, the settlement will come faster. And if they forgive, because let's just try to make that make sense. And I want people to really think about this. If what they're saying is true, that you're telling, hey, say that you forgive them, it's going to get you in a settlement. That doesn't even make sense, because if they're forgiving them, that means what? That means that they shouldn't have to give them anything, if that's the case, meaning a settlement, criminal conviction.
I definitely don't pay attention to the haters. And I think, Tez, they have to remember, part of this is about educating, engaging, and empowering them to do better if they know better. So let's clear this up, like you said. There is two separate things completely. Criminal prosecution and the civil courts are just two different forms of justice. One really has nothing to do with the other. I think the district attorney, there's the criminal prosecution. They don't have to listen to the mayor. They don't have to listen to the city at all if they don't want to. And so you come in and you try your best to be as effective and as strategic as possible to get justice as much as you can for these families. As you said, Tez, you are absolutely right. If you're talking about forgiving and so forth, then what is that signal to the jury and also the community? Say, if you've forgiven them and stuff, why am I out here marching? Why am I out here demonstrating? Jury, why are you going to punish him? Because vengeance is the law. That's what they're saying when they say they forgive the person. But what I never do and never will do is get between a client and their faith. I would have rather, in Botham Jones' case, when they had that seminal moment when his little brother forgave his killer, Amber Geiger, and hugged her, that certainly didn't help us in any way in the legal matters. And we wouldn't have advised that, but I do believe that when people have their faith and serve their God, you don't try to stand in between them. I know my mother raised me in the church, and I have strong faith, and I know there are times to exercise my faith and not, and rarely do I do that when I'm up here advising people, because it is a legal matter that I'm advising them on. And we will have time to pray and forgive outside of this courtroom. But right now, when we're in this courtroom, I think often of what Michael Brown's mother said, Leslie McSpadden, Negro, get off the fence. You either with us or you with them, because they killing our children. And anytime I'm having a moment of contemplation, I think back to Mike Brown's mother, who makes that very clear for me. Which side you on? And we got to be on the side for fighting for Black people, because our children are being taken from us. Beyond that, Tess, I think about the fact that when Jacob Blake's mother says she prays for all of our national leaders, I was literally shocked during that interview with Don Lemon when she said that. You were the first one to point out. I looked at your face and you were laughing at me, because, you know, I didn't want at all anybody to think that my clients were condoning the acts of Donald Trump and all the racist things that he said during his administration, whether it's African in these S-hole countries or whether it's when the white supremacists were trying to take down, standing in the way of taking down the Confederate flags, and he said there were good people on both sides. Or this latest thing that he said, him and his attorney general Barr, that there is no such thing as systemic racism that exists in America. And so if a client says something trying to say, I'm praying for Donald Trump, you can best believe ain't nobody associated with me advise them to say that, as much as I oppose everything that man stands for. But what you don't do is get between a person and their faith, a person and their God. They have to live up to who they believe in and so forth. And so hopefully that puts that to bed, Taz, because it's just asinine when I think about it. And I don't want to lose time paying attention to that kind of stuff, because we have so many positive things, as you know, what we're doing in our law firm to help uplift the culture, to uplift the community, and to uplift our people.
Well, I know that, but they gonna know it today. You know, it's been important to me. You know, I'm always saying, Ben, they need to know this. All the time that you're interviewed, it's only a few minutes. And when it is an extended interview, it's always about the cases. It's few times that people get this, you know, to get to hear you in this way. I know there's been print profiles written up about you, many things written about you. But this interview is so important, Ben, because these are the type of misconceptions. And they'll find something wrong with this, because this is just what they do.
That's their job to hate, Taz. You told me that.
That's exactly. That's their job. And it's my job to be straight shot, no chaser, too, and get this shit straight. And it was important. It was important that they know that Ben Crump has not told no family to forgive nobody. That is not what you do. It is unethical. And it's not why you're there. And that is important. So I'm so glad that we put that to rest. But speaking of all the positive things that your firm is doing, because I think this is important as we move further in this conversation, your firm, Ben Crump Law, represents not just police brutality. That's another myth. Again, this show is about setting the record straight, myths and misconceptions of Attorney Crump, not just police shootings. Recently, there was a case in Disney representing a white woman. You have worked on, as you mentioned earlier in our interview, Flint victims. You've also worked with women on the Johnson & Johnson case. There's several cases, the National Black Farmers, so many other things that you do outside of this that always doesn't necessarily get the media attention that it deserves. And you know why? Because they always want to be able to put you in a box. They really don't want to talk about all the other things, because then if they talk about all the other things, then it's harder to put you in a box. So can you speak to a little bit of that on some of the other cases that you're working with that people may not be aware of that have nothing to do with police brutality?
Yes, Taz, and really, civil rights work is not the most prosperous work. So you have to do other work to be able to finance these civil rights cases. And so we talked about Flint, how we were able to successfully achieve a historic settlement for the children of Flint. And that's not done yet, but it's a situation where you look at the environmental injustices that our people face. And so we do a lot of that work. And then we look at the Johnson & Johnson talcum powder litigation, which many people still don't know to this day, Taz. And that's why I try to use my influence and platform that God blessed me with to try to tell everybody I can about the injustices that exist in the world that's affecting our people. The talcum powder litigation literally is Johnson & Johnson, one of the Fortune 40 cases. I'm talking about one of the 40 largest corporations in the world had preyed and targeted Black and minority women with their baby powder. And, you know, it's a culture thing. We were always taught to put baby powder down there in our privates to make sure we were fresh. I mean, my mother did it, my aunts, my cousins, everybody. And so what Johnson & Johnson neglected to tell people in the late 90s, when these reports started coming out, that there was causal connection between using baby powder on your private parts and ovarian cancer. Well, white women, once that came out, they stopped using it. But you know what those son of a guns did, Taz? They looked at the market research and they said, well, we noticed a great fall off of white women, but we see that Black women and Hispanic women They really haven't stopped using it. So let's redouble our efforts. Let's go market to music festivals. Let's go market to, you know, civil rights organizations to encourage more Black women and Hispanic women to use our baby powder, even though they had memorandums within their corporate files that said there was a connection between ovarian cancer and the use of talcum powder. And then we look at the Black farmers with the Roundup, you know, the weed killer that we use in our yards and they use out in the fields. And that's causing non-Hodgkin lymphoma cancer. And so these Black farmers have been marginalized and disenfranchised. Everybody sees commercials every day about Roundup settlement, Roundup litigation, and so forth. But they were forgetting the Black people and the Black farmers. So we made it our mission to go represent them. And now we represent thousands upon thousands of people in that litigation. And then I think about the fact that we are doing the LGBTQ community litigation against Truvada, which was a HIV drug that was causing renal failure and them to you lose bone density. And so we were working on that type of litigation. Our work will speak for us. People who like us are going to like us. People who don't like us are not going to like us. I have very little time. I think like T.S. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, the most dangerous man in the world is the person who is so focused on what they're doing that they have very little time to consider what your objective is.
Absolutely. And you do that like no other. I just want everyone to know, being around you, and I know you're working on a documentary that's coming out. I cannot wait for that to release so people can see all of the different directions that you're pulled into and how you're able to keep a calm and a peace about yourself and work with these families to be their brother, a father figure to some, pastor, mentor, friend, legal counsel, you know, all of those things to just keep the family moving forward. You know, when we deal with these families, we walk into pre-existing conditions that had nothing to do with the case. You know that, nothing to do with the case. And you have to, and it's a science and an art, you know, working through all of those things. I want you to get your flowers while you're alive and the history be told while you're alive. Because if people can celebrate Johnny Cochran and how he used the media to create a narrative and to fight a negative narrative, whether people believe OJ did it or not, the point is he was able to utilize the media to tell the story. And so if we can celebrate that, why not celebrate the fact that you've been able to do this a dozen plus times on a high profile level, but still representing many cases that people have never, ever heard about. I want people to know that you do, you are open. You see value in everyone's voice, even mine or anybody that, you know, whether they're just now new in the business or a lot of people that I've introduced you to that will never imagine you spending time talking to them. You absolutely see value in everyone. And this interview is not some cheerleading, you know, rah-rah when people listen, because that's what they be saying. Oh, you just cheering being on. No, I'm telling you what I've witnessed for myself. You have been remarkable in lifting as you climb. I have a lot of clients, as you know, that I work with that people never know that I work with, that you may know and others may know that I give, that I work in the communication space. And that's fine. They don't have to give me credit in a public way. You have always done it. I want people to know, I have told you multiple times, Attorney Crump, you don't need to keep doing that. Just do. But you make it a point to know what value I bring to your team and others. You make a point that people know about co-counsel. It's not just you working on these cases. There's other attorneys. There's always a local attorney in every city on these cases that you're working with. And you make a point to include the local attorneys, to include the consultants, to include whether it's Charlemagne for just, you know, doing an interview or mentioning Ricky Smiley, Steve Hart, whoever helps you move these conversations through. You always make a point to lift as you climb. And I just want you to speak on that. And then we're going to go into voting and wrap up.
Yeah. You know, it's so deep, Tez. It starts with my mother, really, because my mother, like most Black women, were miracle workers. And I watched my mother raise three boys on her own in the project, working two jobs, one as a hotel maid doing laundry in the morning and afternoon, and then leaving that job and then coming, making sure we had food on the table, did our homework, and then went and worked at the Converse Shoe Factory. That's why Senator Kamala Harris and I talked so much and joked, Tess, about Chuck Taylor's, because my mother and them knew Chuck Taylor when they used to make the Converse shoes. But my mother also would indoctrinate in my mind, Tess. She would always tell me after I watched that lady working herself to death to make sure we had a roof over our head, food on the table, and hope in our hearts. She would tell me that, baby, life ain't fair. Life is hard. You make it fair by what you bring to the table. And if you don't bring anything to the table, don't expect anybody to let you sit down at the table. And then she would say, when you get to the table, make sure you bring some of us with you. And I always remember that, Terrence. And so when I think about a sharp, brilliant, articulate sister like yourself, I'm like, hold on, man, it would be a shame of me to get all of the benefit that you give me. And I mean, some of the things, some of the talking points and stuff have really made the difference between me being successful in litigation. I think about Flint, Michigan, and all the work you did there. And I would be remiss if when I got an opportunity to give reflective sunshine to young brothers and sisters, whether it's my co-counselors, and I make a point of working with our young black lawyers on every case. I'll be having white lawyers working with me, but you can best believe there's going to be a black lawyer there, a young person who I'm making sure not only get a claim, but also get money so they can grow their business. And that's very important because I think God has blessed me more than I could ever have imagined. I mean, I'm a little country boy from the projects, and to be considered one of the top lawyers in the world, I think about the people trying to bring me to Europe and so forth to speak and to Brazil and Africa. And I think about when we're in the projects, nobody ever would have thought about that. So how could I keep the blessings to myself? How could I not share the blessings with as many people as I can share? And that's really, Tez, why I just can't get caught up on the haters, because I do believe that God has a plan for me, God has a plan for you, and can't nobody stop God's blessing that he has for
you. Amen. Amen to that, and I believe it too, but I'm still going to check them all along the way. Every chance I get, I can't catch them all, but every now and then, you know, when we have these opportunities, I want to do it because your legacy is important. I want to talk about the upcoming election. We have an election coming up, obviously.
Yes, ma'am.
There's a lot of talk about, you know, you and I go back and forth about this all the time because, again, proving that you keep people around you that are different. I worked for Senator Bernie.
Malcolm.
Yeah, I'm Malcolm.
And I'm
That's Mark. Right.
No, never get it confused. She is the Malcolm, always.
Always. Never get it confused.
I be saying, hey, Tez, I think we got her. Tez be kicking them while they down. And don't you ever think about it.
I love it. If people get a chance to go watch us on the Breakfast Club we did in Minnesota, when I was really going in on Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Oh, God, you were.
And you were patting my back.
And pulled me into it.
And you were patting. Charlamagne threw me the layup, so I had to dunk it. And then Ben started patting me on my back when I was going too far. I laughed. We laughed on the plane because somebody in the comments said, Ben, don't be patting our sister on our back. She was just going in.
I was trying to calm her down because this United States senator who had done a lot of things that were probably not beneficial for our community was trying to act as if she had did so much for our community, and Tesla Figaro was not having it.
So let's speak to that, you know, because, you know, I'm not a fan of Biden, and you have had, you know, your concerns with Joe Biden, and who doesn't? Anybody in the civil space or anybody concerned with, in criminal justice wouldn't have concerns with Joe Biden. But I want you to speak to, and then, you know, there's the argument out there, well, let's just go with the lesser of two evils and we got to get Trump out. I want you to talk. Because, you know, you and I tell you all the time, everybody not scared of Trump. You know, people that don't have nothing, they're not scared of Trump being in. But I want you to speak to what it means when you have a Republican-controlled legislative body, not just at the federal, but at the state and local. And Daniel Cameron is a great example. Daniel Cameron, for those listening, that is the state attorney for Breonna Taylor. And so speak to that, like how these elections matter, even if you're not motivated by Biden, if you don't hate Trump enough, speak to why it is important to vote on November 3rd, especially when we talk about our judicial system.
You know, Tez, I remember in 2016, many people said, well, it doesn't make a difference between Hillary and Donald Trump. And in the 4 years since people stayed home on Hillary and Donald Trump and his Republican conservative agenda became president, they have appointed 300 federal judges. And if they get their way, and Tez, you tell me it's going to happen, I pray to God it won't, but he's going to get to appoint a third Supreme Court justice who is going to influence our way of life for days and decades to come. I mean, it's going to be far-reaching consequences what those Supreme Court justices are going to do. And so elections have consequences from the top to the bottom. And when I say from the top to the bottom, it matters who you elect as your congresspeople. It matters who you elect as your governor. It really matters who you elect as your mayor, because the mayor is going to pick the police chief. And we know Black people's most interaction with the government is going to probably be with the local police. That's the reality, because they target us. You know, they profile us. And when we do the Know Your Rights Camp test with Colin Kaepernick, we tell the young people, it's not if the police pull you over, it's when the police pull you over. Because you, if you're Black in America between when? The ages mm-hmm. of 18 and 35, you are going to get pulled over by the police for riding a bicycle while Black, walking while Black, driving while Black, shopping while Black, banking while Black. There's going to be something that gets you confronted and detained by the police. And so it matters who that mayor is, who picks that police chief, who dictates what kind of police department we're going to have. And that's why Breonna Taylor's settlement in the civil matter was so significant, put aside the $12 million, which was one of the largest amounts ever paid out for a Black woman in the history of America for a wrongful death in a police shooting. But those reforms, just this fact that they're going to incentivize police officers to live in the communities that they actually police. I mean, that's the neighbor. We want to hope and believe that they would be less apt to shoot first and ask questions later if they say, oh, that's Tez's brother. Oh, that's Marcy's boyfriend, you know, and they know him and so forth. And think about what they're doing. If they stay in the neighborhood for 20 years, they would have essentially bought them a home. And we know the greatest opportunity for access to capital and wealth for middle class and blue collar people is home ownership. And so that's significant. And that's what elections matter when you have Democrats in power in the mayor's office in Louisville versus the Republican Daniel Cameron, who went out his way in his grand jury to make sure that these killer cops were exonerated for killing Breonna Taylor. And then when you think about the district attorney's test, man, I mean, literally, the district attorney in every county is decided by a few thousand votes. And Black people, if we go vote, we will be the critical mass. The DA decides who goes to jail. He decides if that killer cop and Trayvon and Philando Castile and Michael Brown in Ferguson and Walter Scott in New York, Eric Garner in New York, Tamir Rice in Cleveland, Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida, Botham Jones in Dallas, Texas, Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Joseph Richardson in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Stephon Clark in Sacramento, California, Ezell Ford in Los Angeles, California, Dijon Kinsey in Los Angeles, California, Ayanna Stanley, the 7-year-old killed in Detroit, Michigan, Natasha McKinney, the sister in her t-shirt and underwear inside the jail who was tased 12 times and died. The DA is going to decide whether they go to jail or not. But you know what else that DA is going to do? He's going to decide whether your cousin, whether your nephew, whether your son, whether your daughter, whether your husband, whether your brother, whether your daddy, whether your mama, they gonna decide quite literally who goes to jail in a community, who's given the benefit of the doubt, Who's given the benefit of consideration? Who's given the benefit of possibility? That's what that local district attorney is going to do. And so when that district attorney is sending all our children to jail, I mean, in every grand jury proceeding, but then when we have evidence of a cop on video shooting and killing or excessively brutalizing a black person, and they don't send out the person to jail, you should not be saying, oh, being Crump lost the case or whatever great civil rights law you're fighting about. We were trying to fight to bring attention to it. And you ain't going to hold him accountable? Y'all ain't going to talk about the prosecutors? That's why we got to educate our people mm-hmm. and engage our people. And so, Tez, I appreciate, don't ever think I don't appreciate you trying to go clear them out for me, but I don't even worry about that foolishness no more, because if they too ignorant to understand mm-hmm. that it's these white prosecutors that are letting these killer cops get away with murder, then they don't really understand American history.
That's exactly it. And you know, I don't spend too much time trying to clear it out because you got me busy working. We're actually doing the work. I just think it's important that it's at least out there, just like in court, that it's on the record. And this is an interview that at least, you know, put it on the record because it's important to say that. And I will say this before I close. I hope the Democrats listen, you know, to what you just said, because that entire thing that you just said gives people a reason to vote. You didn't mention Trump or Biden one time. It gave them something of substance that made sense, that connects, that talks about how it affects them. And like we mentioned earlier in the interview, over 100 police reform policies have been put in place since the murder of George Floyd. So this is working. It's not always this change is going to come. It's coming down the lawn. Keep on going. Who want to keep showing up for a losing team? If you can be out and explain that and explain how it makes sense, that's what people want to hear. Because the moment we say, well, it just got to be about Trump, it just turns off a lot of people, because although that motivates some, it doesn't motivate all. And the least of these people that really don't have and don't have money, they're just not motivated by it. The Trump fear tactic, because they already don't have. But if you can explain it in a way that you did, that it makes sense, actual substance, then we can see more people at the polls on November 3rd. And that's what I've been pushing for, you know, to get that message out.
And there's so much truth you say, really, when you think about the fact after Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, the young people started to strategize and organize. And they made sure that the white district attorney, Bob McCullough, who refused to prosecute the killer of Michael Brown, who had his hands up in broad daylight in Ferguson, Missouri, and we all started saying, hands up, don't shoot, they made sure he got defeated. And a young African-American who had never run for office was elected for the first time as a black prosecutor in St. Louis County. And so elections matter so much when we give people reasons to go vote. I think about Erbis Ayala, who got elected in the aftermath of Trayvon in Orlando. I think about Kim Fox in Chicago, who got elected in the aftermath of Laquan McDonald. You remember that brother who mm-hmm. we don't talk about much. I didn't represent him. I wish it got more attention in that case, because that video was just horrific when you think about he got shot while he was running away from the police, even though all mm-hmm. 13 of those police officers lied and said that he was charging at the cop with a knife. The video clearly shows he was running away, shot him one time, and then the police officer proceeded to shoot him 17 times more while he was on the ground and executed that young black 17-year-old boy, Laquan McDonald. And it was in the aftermath of that Chicago Cook County organized and strategized and elected their first black in their history to be prosecutor. And so I know we can do it, Tez. We just gotta have the right messages. And that's why I appreciate you going on all these shows with your straight talk, no chaser, and really breaking it down. Because you know I be telling Senator Kamala Harris, when you tell me stuff, I just be texting it right to her. Because I'm like, you need to consider this now, because we got to admit our mistakes in the past, and we got to talk mm-hmm. about how we can resolve them together in the future, and that we're going to own up to what happened, but we're going to do better with your help. And
that's right.
I always deliver that message. Do not fight what you have done, because what is done in the past is done in the past. You can't go back and change it, Only thing you can do is try to convince me that you learn from your mistakes and you're going to do better. And
that's right. And like the old blues song says, put it on paper, because being black is not enough. And, you know, I know you uplift black folk. You know, I'm always quick to say, yeah, they're black men, but still we got we have to make sure that we hold them accountable. And I want to say this, and I'm going to let you close. I'm not worried about what the haters say either, because we're too busy to move. But your legacy is important. And I think about Monroe Byrd, your client, our client, that we met in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when nobody talked about their case. And the family reached out to me and said, they're changing the narrative. They're making him be something that he's not. He's a good kid. He really is. You know, a lot of folks like say, oh, he was a good kid. He never did anything. Monroe Byrd really was a good kid. You know, son of a pastor, mother, first lady. Never got in any trouble in his life, literally. And being shot by a security guard as he was driving away, paralyzed from the neck down. When I called you and said, Attorney Crump, I remember putting out a press release by myself on just my WordPress. No big name behind it. I wasn't doing national commentary at that time. I just did the only thing that I knew to do and said, I have to put this out just so that somebody knows it. And calling you and saying, Attorney Crump, something has to be said about this young man. And because he was living, and because it wasn't on video, that story wasn't told. But through the advocacy and through really pushing, you did get that story told on Crime Watch Daily. It was a story that no one ever really didn't give a lot of attention to. But I remember the look in Monroe's eyes. He was paralyzed from the neck down. So nothing on his body moved but his face. He couldn't move his arms. He couldn't move his chest. And walking into his room, the only thing that could move was his mouth and his face. And the smile on his face that said, my publicist is here. That, I take that with me, Ben, because When you have a living victim live, look in your eyes and say, this is the only person fighting for me. I don't give a damn what they say on Twitter. I want it on the record because I want the information out there. But what moves me is Monroe Byrd saying they're here now to fight for me. I remember bringing you to the hospital, standing by his bedside saying, man, I'm gonna do everything I can to fight for you. That was so powerful to me. He couldn't move anything but his mouth. And I want people to visualize that. When they sent Monroe Byrd home and we were at the hospital, and I remember saying, because his insurance, even though he was a Native American, he had Native American insurance, he had private insurance, his insurance was exhausted. And I said, if you send him home, you're sending him home to die. And that was not to be negative. It was not to wish anything harm on him. But it was just what I felt in my spirit. And Monroe Byrd passed away 60 days after sending him home, less than 60 days. His story, in which we know we did the hashtag Stand for Monroe. When I'm standing in this space and you allow me an opportunity to stand next to you and all of your brilliant legal team, I am standing still for Monroe Byrd and people like him, because when these victims are deceased, we don't have a chance to talk to them. And Monroe Byrd put something in me to know what that means when all they have is that little bit of hope. And so I just wanted to speak from my standpoint to thank you for the opportunity to be exposed to something that will go in history books on all of the things that you've done, just personally, you and your team and everything that you've contributed to social justice. And I'm going to leave with that. And I do want people to read your book. You don't talk a lot about your book. I'll be on you about that. But you have a book called Open Season, The Legalized Genocide of Color People, and where you connect all of these stories and how this is so historic and how people need to have an understanding of history. But Attorney Crump, who Ben, my brother, I want you to know that you have certainly impacted my life, the life of my daughter as a single mom, and given me an opportunity to be on this microphone. And with that, I'm going to let you close and have your final statement to leave us with some hope and some encouragement on how we should continue on to stay on the fight and know that the battle is not over.
Absolutely. And Tez, you are a force of nature. I don't mean to say that lightly, because I never ever want to be on the side of Tez when she's playing the Malcolm role. Every now and then, she'll stay with me on Martin's side as long as I can, and then something happened and I see Malcolm jump out. But Tez, congratulations on the show. I just believe that you have an incredible future. I don't even think you fathom what God has in store for you. This is just one step on the journey. And I'll conclude like this. People often ask me, Tez, what is it that keeps you going, Ben Crump, after all these cases, all these miscarriages of justice where the killers are not held accountable because they're wearing a gun and a badge, and, you know, all these racist stand your ground laws. What is it that keeps you going? And I say the same thing every time, Tez. Two answers. Number one, I look at my daughter, my children. You know, I'm so proud of them. I look at them, I see the hope in their eyes, the optimism. A chancellor, my little bass god stepson, he called me Uncle Ben. He out there leading the Black Lives Matter in Tallahassee while he's smoking weed. And I'm like, man, how you going to be a real leader while you getting looted up every night? But even with his shortcomings, I see the potential and the hope. And that inspires me to fight because I can't give up on them. If we gave up and said, you know, there's nothing we can do, then really we're giving up on our children. And we can't do that because our grandparents sacrificed and didn't give up on us. Our great-great-great-grandparents back in the cotton fields in slavery, they dreamed about you, Terrence, being on your own podcast. They dreamed about me being a lawyer. They dreamed about that, and that's what kept them going, saying that I know there is a brighter future for our people. We just got to believe. We just can't give up on us. And so that's what motivates me. And then secondly, the final reason that I know without a shadow of a doubt that we're going to win, I remember what they taught me in first year law school. They would indoctrinate it in our minds, Tez. They talked about precedence. They kept saying everything has to be based on precedence. They kept saying all these present court cases and future court cases, they have to look to precedence because we have to have consistency in the law and everything has to be based on precedence. Now, I didn't believe that, Tez, because when I look at the precedence based on Black people in America with these laws, it tells me that the United States Supreme Court said that we were slaves. And based on precedence, if we kept everything the same, you and I would still be a slave. You remember the Dred Scott decision said that there were no rights that a Black man had that a white man was bound to respect. So that was the precedence in America. So I didn't accept what my professors were telling me, but I did understand what they were trying to communicate to us, that based on precedence is a good indicator of what is likely to happen in the future. And so when I think of the precedence of Black people in America, I think of everything that we've overcome. I mean, we overcame slavery. I think of the precedence that we overcame the Middle Passage. I think of the precedence that we overcame being defined as 3/5 of a human being. I think of the precedence where Dred Scott decision, that terrible decision said we had no rights that a white person had to respect. I think of the precedence of Reconstruction. I think of the precedence of us overcoming separate but equal, us overcoming Plessy B. Ferguson, us overcoming Jim Crow Jr. and Jim Crow Sr. And I think about everything that Black people have overcome that America has thrown at us. And you know what that tells me? Based on precedence, that whatever they throw at us in the future, we gonna overcome it and we gonna be all right. Because our precedence as Black people in America, that we will overcome whatever this racist society tries to throw at us. God bless you, Tesla Figaro. Thank you for giving me that unsolicited advice. It has served me well along our journey, my friend. It has served me very well.
Well, I appreciate everyone listening to America's Black Attorney General. Thank you so much, Ben Crump, for lending your time, your very important time that you have out there serving. And I just want people to know this. If Ben Crump can deal with death threats, you can best believe he doesn't give a damn about what you're saying on social media. This is about social justice. However, it was important that we put this out here, the myths, to deal with the myths, misconceptions, the truth, so that you can hear hear directly from Attorney Crump. None of this interview was scripted. None of it was pre-planned. It was raw, straight shot, no chaser. You just heard a conversation that Attorney Crump and I have all of the time. And I always tell people, you heard Attorney Crump say that at the end of the day, he's here to do the right thing. And there's a song, an old spiritual song that I played at my mother's funeral. And it said that when I get over, I'll put on the robe and I will tell the story. And at some point, you will have to tell the story, whether I'm telling it on this microphone, whether I'm telling it at the protest, whether I am screaming it to an elected official, the story must be told. And Ben Crump is one of the best storytellers of social justice and the injustices that Black Americans have received in this country. And so I always tell people, use it, lose it, but I can't make you choose it. But at some point, you will have to make a choice, and we will be dividing up the weak from the strong, the G's from the busters, the sheep from the goat. And I'd suggest that you are on the right side of history, like Michael Brown's mother say, you either with us or you not. And I always say, you're either with us or you're not. We organize from block to block. Thank you so much, Attorney Benjamin Crump, for joining me today. You have been listening to Straight Shot No Chaser with Teslin Figueroa on the Black Effect Podcast Network on iHeartRadio. Until next time. If you like what you heard on Straight Shot No Chaser, please subscribe and drop a 5-star review and tell a friend. Straight Shot No Chaser is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. I'm Teslin Figueroa, and I'd like to thank our producer, editor, mixer, the one and only Marcy DePina, our mixmaster, Dwayne Crawford, and our executive producer, Charlamagne Tha God. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.